Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Bengal Tiger Podcast. I'm Matthew Bruni, and joining me once again is Shay Dixon. And
what's up? It is
time for the mailbag, Shay, before this tropical storm slash hurricane hits. So,
yeah, everyone in the path down here in Louisiana, or depending, like I said, it's Tuesday at 11, whichever direction this goes, Gulf Coast, Texas. Thoughts and prayers. Everyone stay safe, and hopefully we can get through this week and onto a week of football with without much damage. But yes, this I think yesterday everybody was like, wait, a hurricane? And then now it's full on here on Tuesday as everybody preps for it.
Yeah. So but we got to get through this mailbag relatively quickly, and we got about not even 20 questions. So now I left it open for an hour this morning, so nobody can be mad at me, but we got about 19 questions in here, and we'll get to all of them. So I'm ready to jump right in it.
Yeah, and just a shout out again, we like to start each pod. We're on the Bengal Tiger every day. Thanks to everyone that continues to sign up. I'd gotten a couple DMs about what deal we have going right now. The deal is $8.99 a month, gets you an annual membership. So get it from now until week two or three of football season next year for less than $9 a month. If you go to the BengalTiger.com, it'll pop up and show you right there for join today. And again, thank you to everybody who has signed up in the past couple of weeks to start the season. And Maddie B, by the time most people listen to this, there might be good news on the men's basketball front. We're covering recruiting, obviously, for women's basketball and men's football. Softball picked up some commits, and then obviously knee deep in football season, which is what the mailbag's all about.
Yep. So we can just
let's rock it.
Let's do it.
All right. First question, and these all come from the board, members of the Bengal Tiger. If you're watching on YouTube, you'll be able to see different things, but discuss it with us and all that. But we don't take questions there. It is from the board, just a heads up. Burke, Matthew, why are you deleting GIFs? Burke would want me to ask. Matthew's heavy. It's, or Billy. Blame Billy. Billy mods.
Billy does mod too.
You can't tell if it gets deleted who deleted it. So he blames you, Matthew.
I didn't delete his question, if that makes him feel better. I left that in there for to
start. He said he worked hard on all those GIFs, and now they're being deleted.
There you go.
So that's our internet talk of the day. Memes, GIFs, and we're moving on. Capital City. How do we make Harold Perkins more explosive and disruptive? And then he asked a question about the offense. But first, start there, Matty B. In the offseason, Harold Perkins said, the feedback from scouts here is that I need tape at middle linebacker, that I may not. People say, oh, he should be a Micah Parsons. He's not built like Micah Parsons. He's not the same player, that he has to be this edge rusher forever. And how do you blend? Because we never saw him work at star all offseason. It was a number of other people, including Sage Ryan, or including Juwan Johnson, who's bounced around. But Perk stayed at middle linebacker. Your thoughts on the question, how does he become more disruptive, whether that is keeping him in his current position or moving him?
Yeah, I'm currently looking up, just so I make to make sure I have everything correct, the height and weight of Damone Clark, the height and weight of Micah Parsons, the height and weight of Tyron Hopper, like all guys. And
Tyron Hopper was Missouri's linebacker that Blake Baker used so effectively.
Exactly. And so when going into the year, we talked about Damone Clark and Tyron Hopper as two guys that I think Harold Perkins could model his game after and could be similar to in terms of how in terms of Blake Baker getting the most out of them and getting a ton of production, a ton of TFLs and whatnot. And I mentioned this on the post-game podcast, but I think it's just there is a lack of, I think, technical ability and as well as physical ability in terms of taking on blocks. That is the most concerning thing. He's not quite big enough. Like, even if he's listed at 6'1", 220, he's not physically imposing enough to take on those blocks. And there's a reason why, you know, Brian Kelly said last year when he was 210 or whatever he was like, there was no hope for him at inside linebacker. Like, you just can't play at that weight. So he's put on 15 pounds or so, and the hope is he can take that on. Well, if you just add weight, and let's say add some strength as well, but you're not technically able or you're not used to playing the position, your eyes have to be perfect. You have to be in the right position all the time. And there's just the learning curve is so steep. And that's one of the things I talked about going into the year. It's like, all right, Harold, you know, we know you're a great athlete. Freshman year, play off the edge. Sophomore year, kind of play wherever, you know, as like a Sam, a linebacker on the outside. This year, you have to spend even more time in the film room. You have to spend even more time with the coaches. Like, this is going to be a really, really tough task. And I, you know, have no reason to believe he's not working at it, but it's just, it's, he doesn't have the physical build of a Damone Clark or a Tyron Hopper even. Like, and then obviously you mentioned Michael Parsons, who could play inside and in college and then play the edge in the NFL. Like, he's not 6'3", 250. It's just not what Harold Perkins is. So now you come to a decision where what is his best position as on the defense? And I'm scared to say, but it might be too late. Like, it might be too late. Like, we did not see him rep star or safety throughout the past 8 months. And then you go back to, you know, obviously what he did last year where it was like a flex role. I'm just hesitant that he's going to be able to change positions and be productive anywhere. Honestly, I mean, and then obviously you talk about maybe just moving him back to defensive end, but I like the defensive ends LSU has.
Yeah, so I think people say put him at star, take Major Burns off and put him at star, but so he hasn't practiced there at all.
Yeah, and to me, like, that would strictly be for the pass rushing purposes and to have a guy that can just kind of fly in and make some tackles. And so that way he's not getting blocked on the inside. So I understand the concept of it, but at that point, you're just running a 4-3 and teams are just going to throw the ball at you. And I know Harold Perkins did some good things in coverage, but it's like teams are going to spread you out if you just roll out a 4-3 in the SEC in 2024. So it's not an easy answer. I think I was hoping that Perkins would have more lanes, and whether that's a defensive line issue or a him issue, I don't know. But like, he hasn't had those clear lanes where he can just shoot a gap and get a TFL. Like, he has to take on blocks. He has to shed blocks, and he hasn't been able to do that.
It'll be interesting to see. Obviously, this week against South Carolina, they play a quarterback who runs the football. Does he go to spy in again at times like he did in years past? I'm not sure, but Lenora Sellers is a big guy who's tough to bring down and can run it. So perhaps we see Harold involved in that this weekend. But yes, two tackles, neither of them being so, you know, neither of them being like a solo stop. He hasn't had any forced fumbles. There hasn't been that, as I said, that Arkansas game freshman year where he won the game for them seems like so long ago. So how do you recapture some of that at this linebacker spot? We will see. But look, Greg Penn played well last week, and then the Weeks brothers have played well. So if you can get that uptick out of Harold, then you've got the linebacker room that you were expecting. I don't think we have the answers, but we certainly will see what Blake Baker does, because it's going to be on his mind.
And last thing on this, I don't think Blake Baker is going to give up on Harold Perkins as inside linebacker after two games. Like, it's not going to happen. So give him more games, I think.
I don't think Blake Baker's a bad – I think Blake Baker's a great DC, and I think Harold Perkins is a great athlete. And yeah,
they're going to try to make it
figure
work
out a way to marry those at linebacker.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's stubborn either. I think they're just going to have to figure it out.
Yeah, I agree.
Hoko asked, does our record prediction of LSU change with the news of Guillory, their best nose tackle, being out for the year? I'm not sure if it changes. I just know that I agree with Brian Kelly before the season, Matty V, when he said that, and I'll paraphrase, you could look up at the end of the year and Guillory has no tackles, but he would be one of the best players we had because he can eat up blocks and he frees up everybody else. My question now becomes, who does that and how big of a fall off is it from what Guillory was doing or could be doing? So this is one where, no, I'm not changing my prediction yet because I don't know yet what that next guy up is. We've only seen Guillory so far.
Yeah. I think the third best defensive tackle is JVR Suggs. Suggs is about 20 to 25 pounds lighter than Guillory. Like, Guillory is by far the heaviest dude on the defense.
Well, and he's also a high school national powerlifting champ. I mean, he's got the strength and size.
So again, even if he's not the most dynamic pass rusher, which Brian Kelly talked about in his press conference, he's not a dynamic pass rusher. He's not going to eat up a bunch of TFLs. You know, maybe he's not as dynamic as like a JVR Suggs is, but Guillory serves a purpose in the defense, to your point, at the nose tackle, to take on blocks and, you know, disrupt the centers and guards and whatnot. Can JVR Suggs, can Ahmad Bro or Jalen Lee do that? I don't know the answer. I don't know the answer. I think Brian Kelly said it best, and they're going to have to change things up a little bit in terms of what they get from their defensive line without Guillory, and we'll see. I think starting this week what that looks like, because South Carolina is obviously a run-heavy team.
All right.
Right to answer the question, no, my record has not changed.
Yeah, I'm week to week here. I want to see what it looks like without Guillory before I say whether I think this is a how big of a blow in terms of game wise is it. Like, does it lose you games? I don't know if I can say that at this point.
Yeah.
Go Tigers 10. Which running back do you think breaks out this weekend? Some rainy weather might determine the style of play of both teams. I'm going to be in the camp, Matty B. I'll keep it very short and sweet. And look, Caleb Jackson could break one or two this weekend. We could see Josh Williams roll out for five or six carries and put together a game, a nice game. But Brian Kelly said, look, if teams are going to stack the box on us and all of that, we're throwing the football. And South Carolina is a team, you've already done some film study, but they have a great pass rusher in Dylan Stewart. They rush the quarterback very well, but LSU's O-line actually protects very well, one of the best in the country. They've kept Nussmeier very clean, and they already faced a very talented USC defensive line. I think that if you're hoping to see the run game get going, don't turn on the TV this weekend. I think LSU's going to try to throw the ball all over South Carolina.
Yeah, I'm interested to see how they attack South Carolina, because it's like South Carolina's played Old Dominion and then Kentucky, and Kentucky's offense was just a mess. So it's hard to really get a ton from that game, honestly. But in terms of the running back position, I mean, what options do we have here? It's Caleb Jackson or it's Josh Williams. I mean, Juwan Johnson seems like he'll be in the mix, but I think
he only caught the ball three targets, three passes. They're not handing him the ball off.
They like him as a pass catcher, which is fine. And then Caden Durham, I think, will continue to be as like a reserve and maybe a here there guy, but it's going to be Jackson and Williams, and
which we thought was the 1-2 punch all along.
Exactly.
We thought Emery was going to be slow to come back from injury, and you didn't know what you get from him. And Caden's, yes, John's gone, but the two starters that we thought would do everything are available. You just have to figure out how to run the football when the box isn't stacked. But hey, look, Brian Kelly said, look, if they come out and cover two and put three down linemen out there, then we'll run it. But he's not expecting it. I'm not expecting that. I think LSU will throw the football. And let's remind people, Garrett, like, we're getting too used to this. And if you live through the Les Miles years and all of that, you double take it this. But the new wave of LSU fans or younger crowd thinks that the Joe Burrow, Daniels, and now Nussmeier is commonplace. Nussmeier leads the NCAA tied for the most passing touchdowns, number one in the SEC in completions. Kyron Lacy's number one in the NCAA in receiving touchdowns. And now you have a return game with Xavion Thomas being number one in the SEC in punt return yards, 130. That basically doubles up the totals they had in each of the prior two seasons when they just fair caught it each time. So if I'm LSU and South Carolina's giving it to me, I'm throwing it this weekend. And I don't care what the rhetoric is about, well, you need to eventually find a run game. Brian Kelly said, yeah, I'd love to. I'd love for our run game to be just as good as a pass game. But our pass game's really good right now, and people are giving it to us.
Yeah. All right, what's next?
We've got Joey Buttcheeks. Any thoughts as to why BK's teams at LSU have steadily improved throughout the season but don't appear to be in peak form to kick off? It's better than LSU teams a year past that fold after a loss but weren't doing enough during the offseason. I almost think it's you lose that first game and it becomes so evident that the margin for error is razor thin, and then they are even more locked in. And look, they played two good a great Florida State last team that didn't Florida State team that didn't lose to anybody. USC is about just as good as LSU. I'm not position to position, but overall, that was a very tight game that came down to 8 seconds. And the year prior, you missed an extra point that would have sent it into overtime. So, like, I don't think they weren't not ready. They didn't get run over in any of those games except last year. And they had the Heisman winner on the team and scored 20-something points. Reality was the defense was one of the worst in the country, and Florida State never lost a game. So, yes, I can get stumbling out of the gates, but I think it's only motivated. BK has gotten this team motivated, or they've gotten themselves motivated to know, all right, we already took a loss. We can't take many more. We can only take one more, really, if we want to get to the playoffs. So that's what I think it is. I think it's, hey, we were locked in. Now we're even more dialed in.
Yeah, I'm not as, I guess, I don't know if forgiving is the word, but because this is Brian Kelly, they need to, like, ultimately, this is three straight years of they've put themselves behind the eight ball. And it's, like I said after the game, it's unacceptable. It's embarrassing, like, to have these games where you are the higher ranked team. And we know USC is good. I'm not taking anything away from them. But, and you had opportunities to put the game away. Like, there's just no reason for you to
lose. Well, that's the frustrating part about USC.
Yeah. And so, I mean, think about the position LSU would be in if they had won that game. And then, you know, regardless of the Nichols performance, we're going forward this season saying, all right, this is a top 10 team, expectations, all that stuff, the playoffs. Instead, now you're behind the eight ball and you're playing catch up, which they definitely can do.
Yeah. But I also think, though, that there's fool's gold in winning that game, that there's a chance then that the team thinks they're a little better than they actually are. And maybe you don't have that same.
You'll
take the win. It's a coaching thing. You'll take the win.
Either way, it's a coaching thing. If you're not prepared and you lose, it's bad. But if you win and then go on to lose three games later in the season, I don't think
they weren't prepared. I just think they didn't execute enough to win the game in spots that they could have. And the ball didn't bounce their way on four first turnovers.
I agree, but at a certain point,
you got to find a way to win.
Got to find a way to keep. You can't keep losing these games. Go ahead.
C-Money Case said, after seeing two games, who should get the most reps in the secondary? Changes are coming, Matty B. Sage Ryan is now moving to safety permanently. Jordan Allen has started two games in a row at safety. And that would mean that with the return of Zy Alexander being healthy, that he's going to start. That also means Ashton Stamps will probably keep starting. Now you can bring PJ Woodland in as the third guy and the guy who's going to get the third most reps. From there, J.K. Johnson is out rep Toviano so far, so he's your fourth corner. I think safety will be the interesting one. Does Sage start or does Jordan start?
I think they're going to start Sage. I honestly don't know why Sage ever moved away from safety. I know they wanted to cross
because they had no corners.
Yeah. I mean, but
they've dug themselves out of this portal hole of 2 years of portal takes. Yeah.
I mean, PJ had a good spring, though. I mean, I don't know. And I understand the Zy Alexander situation was fluid, but. Sage Ryan at corner is just never going to work.
We said it, though. It was just buying time until they felt like, all right, PJ Woodland's ready. What we didn't know was that Zy would be back in week two. And I asked Brian Kelly, he said, Zy can handle about half the reps. So if you can rotate Woodland, Zy, and Ashton Stamps at corner, throw J.K. Johnson or Toviano in there for a combined 10, 15 plays, you'll be fine. Safety, more Kylan Jackson, he said, more Deshaun Spears. He wants it to be a rotation. I don't think Jake Olson will fight that notion at all, or Corey Raymond as a secondaries coach. So I think this week we see the most rotation we've seen so far.
I agree. All right. We got to plug something.
Yeah, the Amazon. If anyone doesn't know yet, the Money Game on Amazon Prime just dropped today on the 10th, and it is LSU through and through. This is why this Amazon documentary film crew was on campus this past year. So they caught everything from the women's gymnastics, winning a national championship, to Flauge. They followed around Jade and all these different players. But to give you a feel for it, it is on Prime Video. It's a 6-part docuseries chronicling the introduction of the groundbreaking decision by the NCAA to grant NIL, obviously name, image, and likeness, rights to student athletes, and for the first time ever, earn endorsement deals, compensation while maintaining their amateur athletic status as a student athlete. But Amazon came down, put this all together last year, now dropped it today. And look, it's a lot of people around the country are talking about it, no matter what school they're a fan of, because it's got great insight. And really, nobody took off running on the NIL side like LSU did, and most certainly with the women. And that's a big portion of this, but you do get kind of all access behind the scenes look into LSU athletics through it. And Angel Reese is a big part of it. Obviously, she's gone on to be a WNBA first round pick and set the league record for double doubles as a rookie, breaking Sylvia Fowles' record, LSU on LSU there. But you get kind of more of a look into her personal branding, signing with Reebok, Hershey's, Mattel, and being Bayou Barbie, and then Livy Dunn, who's led the way. There is nobody out there earning more in NIL, not even Arch Manning, than Livy Dunn. And she's a big focal point of this. They won the school's first ever NCAA title in gymnastics. And again, if you don't know, more than 13.2 million people follow LSU student athlete Livy Dunn across multiple platforms. She's on commercials all day long. And then I mentioned Jaden. They followed him around as he was en route to winning the Heisman and then getting drafted by the Commanders, and you get to see all that. And then one of our favorites, Flauge, who's really been doing this, making money long before she got to LSU. She was on America's Got Talent, All-Stars. She had a reality show in high school that she was on. And then coming here, her rap career's really continued to blossom, linking up with Lil Wayne. But for me, nobody balances it like Flauge, because Mulkey's talked about that. It's the her ability to play basketball, be all SEC, be a good student in the classroom, and still wake up at 5 a.m. and go to the studio and work on her rap career. So you kind of get insight into all of that. And one of the executive producer is a man many are familiar with. A good old Shaq is the one who helped put this together. So from start to finish, this is so LSU heavy that LSU fans, check it out. It is on Amazon Prime. It is available now. And once again, a 6-part docuseries. So put one on a day. Very easy to knock out. And shout out to Amazon. We're helping them out. They've linked up with us, Maddie B, to help promote this. So y'all go watch it.
Shout out Amazon.
And there'll be a link below if you want to just click it and watch it in the YouTube video.
Of course. All right. Let's
move on.
Let's wrap through these.
Okay, French Tiger, what's the problem with run blocking? Scheme, coaching, or players? I said this last week. I think you can say it's all of them. I don't think it's one thing that is holding the run game back.
I agree. Ultimately, I do. I think Brian Kelly's right. I think you're right in everything that we've talked about. I do think also, I don't want to let the offensive line off the hook. I don't think the block and the tight ends. I don't think the blocking's been good enough to this point. So I don't want to let them off the hook just because Brian Kelly says they don't want to run it in heavy boxes. That's cool. But also they have not been able to block at a high enough rate yet. So
someone did ask another Perk question. They said, happy birthday, Harold Perkins. So happy birthday to Harold Perkins. Birthday. If it is indeed his birthday. But your take on NFL draft stock and something I mentioned, if a kid says, hey, the pros and the coaches say you need to play middle linebacker if you want to succeed in the NFL, does that come at a cost? Should you just be playing him at a different position if that is the right move for LSU, or do you have to sort of stay in line for what he wants in the NFL? My reaction to this is you don't want it out there that you're taking 5 stars like Harold Perkins. And when NFL scouts say, hey, look, this is best for your future. And you say, well, we don't really care about that. We care about what he's doing right here is not the best route. As coaches, you say Harold Perkins is a hell of a player, hell of an athlete. I can make him work at a few different positions. Like, I don't think that Harold would go through the season with 2 tackles a game. Blake Baker is smart enough to find a way to make this work.
Yeah, no, I agree. If it got out that Harold Perkins wanted to play inside linebacker and you're putting him at star, and let's say Harold was actually mad about it, it would be a bad look. It would be a bad look, and it would be used to recruit against them and all that stuff. So you have to do what's best for the player and what's best for his future.
Germans asked, what does LSU starting secondary look like this week and again in a few weeks against Ole Miss? We just touched on that. But I think that if there is any change, it will be at safety. I think that's the spot after a few games that if things get rough for guys, that maybe we see other people playing more. If it's the younger guys, or as you said, if it's Sage and Jordan Allen and less of Jarden, or if it's Jarden and Jordan and less of Sage, I don't know, or more Deshaun Spears or Kylan Jackson. I think that when you talk about that safety spot, that's one to keep an eye on. I think cornerback's pretty set. You don't have many pieces, so it's going to be Zai, Woodland, Stamps, etc. That's my guess. And I think the only thing that changes by Ole Miss is safety, if they get a better feel for how things are laid out. A lot of people asking about the weather, Irish Tiger, if it's rainy in South Carolina, does it affect our passing game enough to move the spread of the game? I have no clue on that. Doubt it. Chances, poor play by guys like Campbell, Emory Jones, and Perkins, get them to come back next year. No, I don't think any of those guys are coming back.
No,
they'll all have draft stock that's high. We're in week 2. These guys are going to play long seasons. Not at this point, I would expect any of them to come back. I don't think that it's going to be heavy enough rain over there to mess up a passing game for LSU. No. They're going to throw the football.
I agree.
The next question, Bayou Taiga, 96. Any talk of the game time moving Saturday? No, there's not been any talk of that at all that I've heard, with it being in South Carolina. And the storm should be out of here by late Thursday. So getting out Friday like normal shouldn't be an issue for LSU, considering they fly private. Watching the secondary last 2 weeks, said, can someone get Gordon on the phone about Jonah Williams? But seriously, look. I know Jonah's a safety, but help's on the way. And they've got young safeties that are very good. Yeah. You've got DJ Pickett. You've got Cade Phillips. You've got Aiden Anding. you've got guys coming through that are good corners. So yeah. I think this is the end of you having to worry about DBs. Next year, it'll start to feel a lot better.
Yeah, and hopefully, and we'll see how Ashton and PJ develop in the coming years as well. And obviously, there's other young corners as well, but, you know, we'll see how they all develop and, you know, polish their games.
NOLA fan asked about Brian Kelly. Since he's been here, they haven't run the ball well. Is that a strength and conditioning thing? Is it coaching personnel? We already said we kind of think it's a myriad of it all. I also think that when you have Jaden Daniels, that becomes your focal point of running, not kind of establishing it.
Is it just me? Maybe it's because I've just looked around different Twitters of different fan bases across the country. It feels like every single injury and every single problem with the player is they start blaming the strength and conditioning staff and the head strength and conditioning coach. It's like, oh, there's an injury. Well, it must be like Texas Tech, who is going through a ton of injuries right now. I don't know if anyone knows, but like every comment was like, fire the strength and conditioning coach. It's his fault. I'm like, oh my gosh. Okay. I guess everything is the strength and conditioning coach's fault. So now the run game is his fault as well.
Then he asked about Sage and Major. I don't think it's anything about strength and conditioning. They also don't have a Leonard Fournette or anyone back there. I mean, I hate to break that to you, but they're not Caleb guys Jackson that are just doing it all on their own. Caleb Jackson's vision was not great in these first 2 weeks.
Yeah.
You know who Josh Williams is at this point. So,
exactly.
And your third running back's a true freshman, Caden Durham, who just got out of Duncanville. Like, you don't have guys like that who are vets that are going to just run for 150 a game. And the fear, I think, was Matty B, was they said, well, Jaden's gone, and so our passing game, you know, yeah, you ran it, but now we got to be balanced. Do you? Because Nuss looks pretty good passing the football to me. Get these guys in space. If you can't run it, throw it to the flat. Mason Taylor, Aaron Anderson, Xavier Thomas, Juwan Johnson. These guys get the ball in space, and they can do stuff with it, let alone with Kyron Lacy, the return of Chris Hilton, Kyle Parker getting healthy, Shelton Sampson playing. Keep throwing the football, and they'll figure out this running thing eventually. It will not stay this way all year.
Yeah, I agree.
Then he just asked about Sage and Major and just brought up the point. Look, these guys are in year four. They've played for multiple head coaches. They've played for multiple D coordinators. And at no point has any of those coordinators not gone to those guys first. Why? And is that a failure in development or what? I think those guys get put under the microscope. I think Sage was out of position anyways. I think safety is his natural spot. I think Major is going to be better at star than he was at safety. But I think the reality of it is this, and yeah, we'll see more of a rotation. They've got some younger guys, but they portaled so hard the past 2 years that some hit, some didn't. And this is when you were left with fewer than 40 scholarship players at the end of the Orgeron era. I told y'all, this was a multi-year rebuild at DB. Multi, I thought, would be two. Now it's three. But that's because they went back-to-back portaling. Like, yeah, it helped out year one. It did them nothing last year. Denver Harris, Deuce Chestnut. They left you in a massive hole here because you could have taken other guys or already been developing them. So, and there was a time where they did that. They were putting Ashton Stamps out there and letting them go last year and letting them develop. Now you get to see him and you say, okay, I like him. He's good. He's solid. So quit portaling corners, quit portaling safeties, develop these guys. And I think they're on that track. But again, the coaches are not playing guys like Sage and Major if they feel like there's guys on their team that are better than them and more ready. Like, they are not purposely putting guys out there that they think are worse than other players. Like, that's, I don't ever buy into that notion.
Yeah, I agree.
5 for 5. Last week we went 5 for 5 in the red zone. There you go. How can LSU reciprocate that on the road against SC? Go 5 for 5 again.
Yeah.
I would just say get down there and y'all scream to throw to the tight ends in the red zone like Trey does. It's the first thing they did from the 1 yard line, touchdown. So I think that when you get in the red zone, stay aggressive and see how it works out. More touchdowns and field goals, and don't just go for it on fourth down and come away with nothing.
Yeah, no matter what.
Call your shot. How many wins for LSU in the next game? Next five games. Who do they play after Ole Miss? Because they go
South Carolina,
UCLA, South Alabama, Ole Miss, and then who?
Florida, LSU football schedule. I'll tell you right now. Arkansas on the road.
I think they win every single one of these games and I don't know what's going to happen. I mean, I would not favor them against Ole Miss's passing attack right now, but you never know what's going to happen in a night game in Tiger Stadium and how far they've developed in these next four games to get there. So,
yeah. I mean, there's definitely
I'll go 4-1.
the most likely, I guess, would be 4-1 because you still have those South Carolina and Arkansas games, which are sneaky, right? So even if you beat Ole Miss, then maybe, you know, one of those games is trip up. But, I mean, like you said, 5-0 is very much on the table here. If they can figure out the defense and can figure out how, you know, if they need to be a balanced offense or how they're going to move the ball efficiently and how they can score the ball in the red zone. So, yeah, it's I think 5-0 is on the table. I think most likely outcome's 4-1.
These kind of go together for Michael Gary Scott and Go Season asked, Mike asked, was running plays under center a week 2 change and why didn't we do it against USC? I can't tell you why they didn't do it against USC, but then go SN said, do we see more 12 personnel under center? Feels like we have the stars to utilize it. Your quick take on 12 personnel, something Brian Kelly said that if we do right now, and look, they moved Bordelon from O-line to tight end because they're like, look, when we put out multiple tight ends, they often know we're throwing it or we just don't block well. So they moved Bordelon to be an extra blocker. Your thought on more 12 personnel?
12 personnel, yes. Especially if Green and Pimpton will be back this week. So, you know, they'll get them going. 12 personnel, yes. Under center, I don't think it will be at any point this year will be a major emphasis or a major focal point for the offense. Garrett Nussmeier has played out of shotgun every year since he's been at LSU, and he has been very comfortable in that. I think there's a ton of value and there's a reason why quarterbacks go out of shotgun nowadays. I don't think under center solves anything really. So.
And we'll see again, as Coach K says in this next question, SEC play is beginning. We're about to really see some true tests and then we'll see what they go to more often than not. But he said he's got a lot of questions about why players are not holding peers accountable for the 1 or 2, not executing plays on each side of the ball.
How do we know that?
I don't know. Yeah, we don't know if that's – he just says it asks a lot of questions about why players – we don't know if they are or aren't. We're not in the locker room. We're not at practice. We're not in film studies. So just because they're not beating up somebody on the sidelines doesn't mean they're not
– rash
not addressing it. Do you see Juwan Johnson becoming our future Charles Woodson, Travis Hunter type going both ways? No. And honestly, I think he probably sticks on offense. I think that he, with the ball in his hands, what he did at LCA was great. When you put him at DB, having never played DB because he was a quarterback in high school, that development may take so long that guys who played safety and corner in high school and are being recruited pass him up. So if I'm him, I stay on offense and just try to be that gadget player.
I almost said, you know, yeah, he can be one of those, like you said, gadget players or a receiving running back. The problem becomes quickly is LSU has Harlan Berry coming in, and it's not a problem per se.
He catches the ball very well out of the backfield.
Harlan Berry is a freaking awesome player and a receiving back that is going to just step in and, you know, do that. So, but I do think Juwan is more talented right now on the offensive side of the ball. That's not really a question. The question is, I think the upside is, can they get him, if they want to move him back to defense, can they get him comfortable enough? But honestly, with the defensive talent LSU should have coming in, I don't think they'll really need him at safety and especially not at corner. So it'd really just be that nickel star role.
And they have JT Lindsey coming in as well, who coming out of Ash on 14 carries went for 177-1, and he had a 25-yard receiving touchdown in his first game. Harlem went for 268, mixing in what he did, running the ball and then catching the ball out of the backfield. 268, those are average numbers for Harlem. That is why he is the number one running back in America. JT Lindsey will finish as a top 10 back. I'm confident in that. So with a young Caden Durham and then these two guys coming in, I really like the future of the running back room.
Yeah.
And what they can do.
Wes, we got 4 more.
Yeah, Wes said, how does LSU's offense get more explosive, both in the run and passing attack? I'm fine with their passing game.
I'm good. It seems like...
And you don't even have Chris Hilton back yet. Hilton's a starter for you.
That's what I said before the USC game was, without Chris Hilton, I had questions about the vertical passing game with LSU because I talked about this before, but Daniels, Lacey aren't the Malik Nabers and Brian Thomases, which is fine. But also I think with teams playing so heavy in the box, the corners have been playing off. Like they've been giving LSU those 6, 7, 8, 9 yard receptions. and they've been taking it. So
you'll take a 6-7-8 yard run any day of the week. So why not take a 6-7-8 yard pass?
So I'm interested to see once teams start playing them differently and start being more aggressive at the line of scrimmage, then we will be able to judge Lacey and Daniels and so on and so forth on their vertical.
Well, and Brian Kelly said this, like people will just very much say, and rightfully so, well, how can you not run the ball on nickels? Well, Brian Kelly said, look, Nuss chucked out of at least 7 runs because they just kept stacking the box. So we just threw it instead. And they had no trouble doing that against really USC or nickels. And I don't think they'll have trouble doing it against South Carolina as long as the pass pro is there, which it has been the first 2 weeks. So
yeah.
I'm not ready to judge the run game as something that's a complete failure. Never will happen. I just think that we're starting to see the identity of this offense is no doubt going to be passing the football. At some point, you have to run it, but we'll see when that comes. As Brian Kelly said, if the defense gives it to them, they'll run it. Then we'll see how well they can consistently do it.
Yeah.
But Wes did ask this. Can the defense continue to improve throughout the year? How much better can we be compared to now? They give up a lot of yards per play right now. That's not a good thing. I, however, do think that they can get better because so many of the pieces are young and that they are willing to move pieces around in the secondary. Losing Guillory really hurts, but Savion's played great. Shandon Swinson give you good minute, you know, reps. Relaford's played well. Yeah. They'll use Bro some. Paez and, as you mentioned, Suggs have played well as transfers. Like, I think this defense will continue to get better. And remember, you're under a first-year DC. He's only seen them now out there in 2 games, so he'll continue to adjust, not to mention the Harold Perkins factor, all that. I actually think this defense will be, by season's end, a lot better than they are now. This is a learn-on-the-fly defense for me.
I agree. In terms of this being a learning curve for everybody, and I think this is – it's like when you try to put together a puzzle, they have no – they don't even know what it's supposed to look like. Like on the box, you know how you're supposed to see what the puzzle looks like before you make it? They don't even have that picture. So they're just putting this together by scratch right now. And I think that's what's going to be really interesting to see is how long does it take for them to put it all together? And can they do it by, again, let's say the Ole Miss game? Is that a good benchmark? We'll see. I don't think the ceiling for the defense is super high, but I think their floor can be much higher than what it is right now. You shouldn't be giving up 6.5 yards per play against nickels through 2 quarters. Like, you've got to be tighter. So I'm optimistic. I think we'll learn a lot this week because South Carolina, in theory, should not be moving the ball at will on you, but we'll see.
They asked about, do you think we will see, this was from America 1775, a lot of wildcat from South Carolina, given Guillory's out and that Nichols found a little bit of success with it.
Well,
go ahead, Matty B.
I was just going to say South Carolina's quarterbacks, Lenore Sellers and Robbie Ashford, both of them are both big runners that can move. Like they run quarterback sweeps with them anyway. So they don't even have to go to a wildcat per se. They just look to run their quarterbacks quite a bit. And they have Oscar Adway back there, or not Oscar Adway, Rocket Sanders back there, who can obviously run as well.
Yeah. Here's the thing for me. You'll see more Sellers than Ashford. Ashford has played just a little bit, not much at all.
He came in, Sellers got hurt last game for like a drive
To give you an example here, I don't think they have to run wildcat as much as they'll stick to their designed quarterback runs so far this year, and I think this will just prove my point. Lenore Sellers has attempted 38 passes. He's at about 55% passing right now. 21 of 38, that's not good at all. But rushing the ball again, 38 pass attempts, he's run the ball 29 times. So he's running it almost as much as he's throwing it. So that's kind of their look anyways. They want to run it with Lenore Sellers, but I don't think they have to do wildcat to do it. They'll just run their normal play designs.
Yeah. And he's big and physical.
He's huge.
He's a good runner. He's a good athlete. Great athlete.
And he's young, so he's not going to be putting the ball in the air as much as he will later in his career. So this is a year where Lenore Sellers is going to run the ball a lot for South Carolina. So keep an eye on it. As I mentioned, Harold Perkins has spied many of athletic quarterbacks. Could this be one of them?
Yep.
Wes 167 will wrap us up. Any what guys have a chance to become genuine key contributors this year, not just freshmen, but guys who haven't played much yet, but will see their roles increase. I think you have to start with whoever replaces Guillory at D tackle.
Yes.
Whether that's Sean Washington or Jalen Lee or Suggs, whomever it is, that guy's roles are increasing there. And then I think the other answer for me, Maddie B, would be, well, I'm not counting injuries. Chris Hilton will come back and have a huge role. Yeah, I mean, I'm not counting that. I think that the Kylan Jacksons and Deshaun Spears of the world, your young safeties, have a chance to chip into the veterans' reps for significant action, more so than they've seen so far.
I think that's the right answer. I think the right answer is potentially either Sean Washington, Dominic McKinley. You know, whether that's
Dominic McKinley
got 13 snaps, Jalen Lee got, I think, 15 snaps last week. So, like, that group outside of Paez and Suggs, you know, who's going to step up and get even more snaps this year? So that's the group to me. And then, like you said, can Kylan Jackson and can the safeties, you know, well, they'll continue to rotate. But
Spears.
What do they end up settling on? I don't know. So. Yeah.
All right. We did it under an hour this week because Maddie B successfully opened the thread and got it locked in time, knowing that we've got a lot going on today as folks prep for the incoming tropical storm hurricane, which it's turning into. And again, everyone stay safe out there. We will have our normal preview pod. We will have a recruiting pod this week. So more content coming. If you lose power, get everything ready, charge it up. And if you need something to entertain you, check out the YouTube or Spotify or Apple Music. Yeah, we'll be on there. We'll have a few podcasts this week. So,
yeah.
And check out The Money Game on Amazon Prime, no matter where you are. It is a good look at LSU from behind the scenes during this NIL era.
Yep. All right. Thank you all for joining us. We'll be back later in the week. Everyone stay safe, and we will talk to y'all later.